And welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for if not for the curse of geography. I'm Brian Smith.
Oh, I'm Anthony Askew, sorry.
And I'm Gary Hedges.
Thank you.
We'll do that one day. One day.
I think you got it right. Well, I can't say you got it right last time because you weren't even here last time.
Well, I've definitely got it right before, because if I have the notes up in front of us, I'm, you know, it's like a music sheet.
So, before we get to going on this week's episode, let's check in with Anthony as to which one he preferred from the episode he wasn't on, but he did watch all the episodes of.
Yeah, I did.
So you had Dan Cougar, Mike Guiner, and Virus Buster Surge.
Well, Virus Buster Surge is bottom of the barrel. I was really disappointed.
Whereas it was...
I think it was Dan Cougar.
It was middle of the barrel for me and Elliot. Dan Cougar was bottom of the barrel for us.
See, it feels like months ago, because I was ill and
stuff. It is about a month ago, yeah.
Oh, is it? Well, yeah, I think I'd stick with Dan Cougar. Though, that might... How did you say it?
Mike Guiner, yeah.
Guiner, oh right, because I was saying just Mike Gain.
That's not what they say. That's what I said until I watched it, and then I heard what they were saying.
Mm.
And I was like, I guess that's what it is. I think occasionally it sounds like someone's trying to say Mike Gain or Mike Gain.
I mean, I did like that as well, and I did like the robot look in that.
Well, but, yeah, I really liked it because it's like, this is Big O. This is so Big O, it's ridiculous. But they are both Sunrise shows, so... Maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the end of that show, it's even more like Big O than you were perhaps expecting. But this week, we've got three heavy hitters. Well, two heavy hitters. Well, I guess one.
No, three!
I liked all three.
One heavy hitter, one which was eventually a heavy hitter, and then one which aired in the middle of the night.
This was when it was heaviest hitting.
Yes, this was when it was hitting the heaviest.
In the heaviest, that's
all. We're talking Saint Seiya, Ranma ½, and Berserk. So, as I'm still the oldest, you two haven't caught up with me, let's start with my pick, Saint Seiya. In 1974, Masami Kurumada debuted with the manga Sukubin Arashi. 3 years later, he had his first hit, the boxing manga Ring ni Kakero. In 1982, he debuted the ninja manga Fuma no Kojiro. And then in January 1986, he followed it with his most successful series, Saint Seiya in the pages of Shonen Jump. Running for 28 volumes until 1990, a mere 10 months after it debuted as a comic, an anime adaptation produced by Toei Animation aired on TV Asahi, where it ran for 119 episodes, and it was accompanied by 4 theatrical features. Once the TV anime ended, it has returned multiple times as OAVs, sequel series, sequel films, live-action films, and most recently, a full CG series called Knights of the Zodiac Saint Seiya that airs on Netflix. And the series follows the adventures of the orphan Seiya, who becomes the Pegasus Saint, one of Athena's 88 saints. This leads him into battles and tournaments with other similarly divine-powered young men. And currently the original series can be viewed on Netflix in the US. And on Crunchyroll, I think if you're in Brazil and somewhere else. But no longer in English on Crunchyroll. Yeah. And the episode we watched, the very first episode, aired on Saturday, October the 11th, 1986. How old were you in Saturday, October the 11th, 1986, Gary?
I would have been 5.
Anthony, how old would have you not been?
1 year?
Oh, you were actually born at this point. Okay.
No. I'm like reversing it. Like
minus a year. Okay.
Less than a year.
You know, less than a year to be born.
Okay.
BC.
Counting down the days.
We're having to make do with Saint Seiya because Anthony wasn't here yet. I would have been 11 years old. So I think this is the latest I've gone so far in my picks. And instead of this, what was I watching? Well, it was a Saturday, so there was plenty of things I could be watching.
Hell yeah.
Starting with the family-ness.
Absolutely.
Cleverness Gorgeous. Helps with the homework. I think this was my favourite of this group. I can't remember who the animation studio is. The Maddox cartoons.
Yeah, they did like Petty Crayon, Jimbo and the Jet Set, etc.
Yeah, I think Family Ness was the one I liked the most.
Even best though, theme tune as well.
Yeah, I think it's just the theme tune I liked. I think if I went back and watched, Petty Crayon's probably the best one.
Petty Crayon's probably clever, better written, but yes. I think Family Ness wins it because of the catchy theme tune and the fact it's giant monsters.
What was the theme tune? Can we have a rendition?
Oh, God. I can only remember the outro. I can't remember the lyrics to the opening one. Because the opening one is them singing about each of the Nesses one by one.
Yes. There's like a brother and sister blowing some whistles. And it wakes all the family Ness up. And then we run through the various characteristics of the family Ness.
Lovely Ness, angry Ness.
Yeah, they're like the Smurfs, but they're giant dinosaurs who live in a Scottish lake.
Perfection.
I think of British attempts to do the Smurfs, this is probably, it's definitely better than Poddington Peas.
Oh, the Poddington Peas was good!
Really?
Yeah, of course it was.
Then we got Muppet Babies, where it's Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Dark? After watching a monster movie, a very frightened baby Beaker and a tired baby Bunsen come to seek comfort in the nursery. The last thing any of the babies expect is to be chased by the dreaded slime monster.
I'm not going to lie, I hated the Muppet Babies as a kid.
I loved the Muppet Babies because it was...
You were 11, so you must have been the target demographic.
I think.
I like, for me as a young kid, it was not... No,
because it's a weird thing where I think when people made imitations of the Muppet Babies, they were aiming at younger audiences. Where this with it's like constant referencing of Star Wars and things, and it felt like very much aimed at my age. And it was made by Marvel. That was the other thing which made me super hyped for it, because it had the cool CG Spider-Man logo at the end.
Did it? Wow. I've seen this, but I can't remember anything except the babies being a little bit annoying.
I've not seen any of the new. There's a current one, isn't there? A current Muppet Babies series. I've not seen any of that.
Like weird CG?
They are CG looking
fabric looking things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're weird.
Then we've still got Saturday Superstar. I could have sworn this had finished by now, but apparently not. With Mike Reed, Keith Chegwin, Sarah Green, and Vicky Licorice. And the guests are Cliff Richard, Sarah Brightman and Andrew Lloyd Webber, Nick Kershaw, and Terry Nutkins. And cartoon action with Pole Position.
Oh, awesome.
And that is a show which is not as good as its theme tune, but it has a very good
Hell
theme tune.
Hell yeah, yeah. No, the show was... Yeah, let's just say I bought the DVD box set some years ago, watched it, and I was like, wow, I remember loving this show. And then the reality was, I think I just loved the intro and then tolerated the cartoon because the intro had me that hyped as a five-year-old.
Yeah, I can't laugh at you, Gary, because of the amount of the amount of Heathcliff I have to watch after buying the entire run of Heathcliff and Cats and Co.
Yeah.
But, yeah, some of those kind of hold up quite well. Then we've got, after that, we've got Grandstand, and then The Evening. Oh, this is like my ideal time, I think. This may have been like when I was the happiest of a lineup on a Saturday evening. Roland Rat the series.
I was tempted to try a Roland Rat impression. I'm not going to do it.
Ye rat fans. That was what he said. That was his catchphrase.
Who did the voice for Roland Rat? Is it someone famous? Famous outside of the rat?
No. Very much not. Damn. So, apparently the acting bug strikes Roland's incompetent crew. guests on this episode include John Challis from Only Fools and Horses and Nick Kershaw. That's two appearances today.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Then we've got Doctor Who, The Trial of a Time Lord, Part 6. Why is the Doctor behaving so strangely? People don't think much of the Colin Baker era of Doctor Who, but I think I'm still kind of fond of it because just because I was 11 when I was watching it. So I think that's probably all, entirely all it has to do with it. I imagine if I went back and watched, I'd have a similar reaction to Gary watching Pole Position.
Yeah.
Then we got the Noel Edmonds Late Late Breakfast Show, starring Noel Edmonds with Mike Smith. In this week's live show, you've got Claim to Fame and the Golden Gauntlet Challenge. Those both are terms which ring a bell, but I do not recall what either of them were.
He had a breakfast show in the evening.
He had a breakfast show in the evening, yes.
Classic Noel.
What a trendsetter.
Yeah, I believe we mentioned it before that, we're like a month away from them killing somebody on TV.
Nice.
That always gets brought up.
Yeah. Well, I know, killed during a rehearsal, sorry, yeah. I don't think it was actually live on the TV. But, yeah, there you go. I was like, was it this week? No, it was, 13th of November. And yet they still give him more shows after this.
Well, was it, I know we've probably gone through it a million times, but it wasn't directly his fault, was it?
No, but I don't know how far up in the production he was at this point. Obviously lots of his later things he's quite in charge of.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Every Second Counts, the Paul Daniels quiz show.
It was Paul Daniels. I was thinking that. I was like, I'm sure I remember I used to watch this as a kid.
I can't remember. I did as well. Quiz shows. Yeah, same here. I love Paul Daniels as well, so.
Who didn't? Was this pre-Wizbit? Or post-Wizbit?
Or maybe concurrent with Wizbit. I think it's around this time, this Wizbit.
Actually, yeah, because I can't have been... Given I was 5 and I remember Wizbit vividly, then yeah, it must have been around the same time. But yeah, Paul Daniels was very, very cool at the time. I remember having a magic set of his, and it was actually a pretty good magic set. I actually could do some of the tricks.
Did I have one of those things with the egg?
Or like the broken, like a fake broken egg?
No, it's like an egg in an egg cup, and you put the lid on it, and then when you lift it off, it's gone. But obviously the half the egg that you could see was then in the top of the egg cup.
Oh, no, I don't think it had one of those.
Oh, I thought that was like Kids Magic 101.
It probably was, but maybe not in that set.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's married couples competing against each other, and each question they get right earns them seconds. And then whoever's in the lead at the end gets to use those seconds to complete statements to win prizes.
And that format still... kicking. I mean, not with the point aspect in the same way, but people love to see married couples be like, oh, he does this at home. Oh, he puts his feet up on the couch when he shouldn't. People love that. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's still... they do.
But now it's migrated to like celebrity families, like a celebrity and their son. Oh, when dad's at home, he burns the toast or something. I don't know. But it's a thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not in America, but definitely in the UK.
Then you got Russ Abbott Show, with Les Dennis, Bella Emberg, Maggie Moon, Tom Bright, Susie Aitchison, and Gordon Kennedy. I think this might have been my favourite era of the Russ Abbott Show.
I don't know how long that ran for, but I definitely caught episodes of it because I remember thinking that Russ Abbott was very funny.
Yeah, he was on ITV, and then I think when he moved to BBC, he had like better script writers. So yeah, I do remember particularly like the Gordon Kennedy, because it was like Gordon Kennedy would then go be part, was he already part of Absolutely at this point on Channel 4?
Don't ask me, I was only a kid.
That's true. No idea. Probably later, because I probably wouldn't have been allowed to watch Absolutely at 11. So I think when
I always remember. Sorry, I was just going to say, I always remember one gag I always remember vividly, and I don't know if it was from the Russ Abbott Show or if it was something that then was an advert. I know he did adverts for Hamlet Cigars, but it was the gag where he's fishing and he puts on a Des O'Connor record and then lowers the speaker into the water, at which point all the fish are jumping out of the water into his net to escape Des O'Connor's music. And I don't know why that gag stuck with me, but it did, because I don't know if it was an advert, it was on telly regularly, but that's one, like, Russ Abbott gag I always remember, because I think there was years later Des O'Connor got his own back, because Russ Abbott actually also released a record.
A couple. Atmosphere, yeah, being the big one.
Yeah. I think Des O'Connor got his own back and basically redid the gag.
Yeah, that's ringing a bell now, Gary. That had not remained in my mind, but now you've said it, that is, digging its way back
and
out.
An anecdote from a 5-year-old in the '80s, but yeah, I remember that Russ Abbott gag.
And then, as soon as you turned 6, you started smoking cigars.
That was it.
Casualty, I think we might have been watching Casualty at this point. Our house.
I would have probably been tucked up in bed.
But then I probably would, the rest of it is nothing that you've got. A film, Saturday Night at the Movies, The Pursuit of D.B. Cooper. A film I've never heard of, and so I just read it then.
Oh. Who is D.B. Cooper? Is it someone?
Oh, famous? He's the guy who held up a plane, and parachuted from a jet and has disappeared. He's like
a Bermuda Triangle kind of guy.
Yeah, so he disappeared with $200,000 off this plane.
Oh, I bet some great conspiracy theories like, he's living in wherever.
Yes.
Oh, I'm interested. I'm on board already.
I feel like those are sort of conspiracy theories which don't have some sort of harmful social aspect to them. It's like, Horse of the Year show and the Rockford Files. I love the Rockford Files, but I'm pretty sure I would not have been allowed to stay up till midnight to watch the Rockford Files.
No matter how much you liked it.
No. Also, I may not have liked the Rockford Files. Yeah, I probably did, because I think if it had been on during the day at my grand's, I would have watched it. Mm. I think there was nothing of interest on BBC Two, which is why I have no notes, but I will have a double check on the old BBC Two. Because obviously 86, kids, you enjoy what you've got on BBC and ITV and you're not getting anything else any other time. I would not have been interested in anything like here. We've got One Village in China, Secret Life of Paintings, World Chess Report. There was a time when chess would get 40 minutes of TV given to it.
40?
40 minutes of TV.
Ooh.
To get your chess news in for the week.
I mean, I do like chess, but not... Yes.
I was going to say, I probably watch more board game-related content than those 40 minutes on YouTube each week now, so
full circle.
Yeah, I guess if you want to, I'm sure there's like so much chess you can watch on YouTube if you're a chess maniac.
Mm.
There's still no listings for ITV. If you want us to read ITV stuff off, you're going to have to back us on Patreon. Now, number one in the UK pop charts at this time was True Blue by Madonna.
Don't know that one. Is that one of her big ones? Well, it must be big enough to hit number one, but is that big because it's Madonna or is it actually good?
I don't know the order in which the hits come. 86 is a little later, so I think if you heard it, you'd know it. I'm pretty sure if you heard it, you'd know it.
Yeah, I can hear it. I've just clicked it. Yeah, I know it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I wouldn't say it's one of our better ones. Sorry, Madonna.
Okay, on to the thing I couldn't watch, though, because I was not in Japan at the time. Saint Seiya, Episode 1, Revive, Legendary Hero. We are directed here by Kozo Morishita. He's also directed Armored Fleet, Dairuga 15, which you can watch on YouTube. He also the episode director and the storyboard artist for this episode. The screenplay is by Takeo Koyama, the screenwriter for Dragon Ball Z and creator of Broly, and kind of responsible for training most is probably an exaggeration, but an awful lot of the screenwriters of 90s anime as part of his Brother Noppo group. And character design is by Michi Himino, and where you find Michi Himino, you will usually find Shingo Araki, and sure enough, he's here as well. And they did character designs for two of the other Masami Kurumada series, Rigni Kakaro, Fuma no Kojiro, and also Yu-Gi-Oh! Amongst... Also, I think they both worked on the aforementioned Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats.
Nice.
Maybe also Pole Position as well. I don't know, but they definitely worked. They definitely worked on Heathcliff. I know that. And our main cast in this episode, Toru Furuya, plays Pegasus Seiya, who you may know as Amuro Ray from Gundam, or Bourbon / Toru Amuro / Ray Furuya in Detective Conan. Or Yamcha in Dragon Ball, or Sabo in One Piece, amongst many, many other characters. And we've got as his trainer, Aquila Marin, is being played by Yuriko Yamamoto, whose, I think, most iconic role is Yuria from Fist of the North Star, and more recently seen in One Piece as Sanji's dead mum.
Oh, spoilers.
Well, if you're a mum in One Piece, there's a very good chance you're dead.
Is Big Mama dead? Yes.
No, she's not. I think there's one good mum who's alive. There's two evil mums who are alive. That may be it on the mum front. I think all of the mums dead. Apologies to any One Piece mums I'm forgetting. So let me find my notes about what happened in this first episode. So we open on a wrestling match. In a coliseum with men in armour. At this point, I'm now going to have to look up, when did Highlander come out?
82, say, or is that too early?
That's too early. For 86. March 86. God, so, yeah, okay, so it's just a coincidence that they have very similar openings. If the comic is, if this is taken straight from the comic. If it's not taken straight from the comic, less of a coincidence.
Well, I've read some of the manga, because it was... I think it was free on either Comixology or whatever source I was reading, and I can't remember seeing that scene.
Okay.
That opening in that manner, so unless it comes in later. It's a different pace.
That's a shame, because like, that had me hooked from the get-go. I was like, wait, I wasn't expecting this. I'm fully on board with this.
It wasn't until I started reading it out that I realised, this is quite similar to how Highlander starts. It was just like a random wrestling thing. Except this time the wrestling is part of the plot. Yes, we've got two guys, one in purple, one in orange and white, having a fight in a wrestling ring in a coliseum, which has got a packed crowd, and there's a purple-haired woman in a throne who's overseeing it. And apparently this is the galactic tournament between the bronze cloth and the golden cloth saints, and she's the judge, and she's wondering where Seiya is. Why aren't you here, Seiya? Why haven't you got the Pegasus cloth yet? Cut to Greece, where apparently there's been a battle with 1,024 warriors, and only two remain. Whoever wins between these two will get the Pegasus cloth, explains a tall man in a metal mask. This is where we meet Seiya, our hero, and he's fighting a ogre straight out of Fist of the North Star called Cassius. He's a very proud Greek man. He doesn't want a Japanese man to take this Pegasus cloth. A masked woman called Marin tries to intervene, but she was told off by another woman in a mask. Cassius tries to chop Seiya's ear off, but, oh no, Cassius, it's your ear who goes flying, at which point you think, blimey, this is very violent.
Very violent.
Yeah, what the hell? Also, at this point, I was like, this is very Fist and North Star. Ogre character notwithstanding.
Apparently we get a flashback as Cassius has been beating up Seiya for 6 years. They've been training together, and that's why Seiya won't kill him. He's basically trying to get Cassius to just, like, stand out. I don't want to have to hurt you any more than I need to. We get the name of
killed the other 1,000 people or so, right?
I don't know. A lot of them seem to still be there, because there's a bunch of people in armor and stuff in the crowd, and they show up.
I just thought they were like henchmen, not competitors.
No, I think I think they're all people who've been trained by, Shina and Marin.
Marin, yeah.
So he needs to feel the cosmos burn, you need to feel the cosmos burn within your body. As we get a flashback. That's why Seiya's gonna win, you see. I think he explains that, and we get a flashback of him being trained by Marin how to use the cosmos, and I was like, this is quite like the ripple from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which came a year later. So I was like, okay, these all, as much as this takes from Fist of the North Star, but I also think maybe there's stuff it's taking from his previous things, because I know I've not seen any of the ninja one, but I've seen bits of the comic of the boxing one, and that would go into like starscapes during the boxing match, just as they, people go into starscapes here, except there's like a absolutely science fiction reason for it happening in this one. And yeah, basically it's a flashback to, is it Shiner or Marin? I've written Shiner, but I think it might have been Marin. Teaching Saya how to blow things up on an atomic scale with his fists.
It is Marin, because the other one's the evil one.
Well, not evil. Not evil, no.
But you know, she's not on Saya. I think they're sisters as well. I'm pretty sure those two are sisters.
Yes, his Marin is the red-haired woman training him as a kid. Yeah, because she, Marin's trained Saya, and Shiner's trained Cassius, and that's where the conflict emerges. And yes, you need to turn your fist into a meteor, but Cassius still won't stand down due to his pride. So Saya uses the Pegasus Ryuseiken, which results in a lot of blood and a lot of torn clothing, as he basically turns Cassius into a human punching bag. And then we get a little eye catch with a literal punching bag, which seems very comedic and of the time. And then the second eye catch is a whole bunch of stern-looking armored heroes. So he gets given the cloth, which he's very excited and starts hugging it. And they're kind of a bit like, Saya, please listen to us. We're about to give you some instructions here on how to use this. So you're supposed to only use it for, not to use it for selfish means is how to use it. It's stored in like a big stone block. Which reminds me of those big stone blocks out of Mario. Can't remember what they're called.
The things that drop down and crush.
Yeah.
Gary on the what they're called.
Shiner appears to be mad and, he's trying to stop him from, leaving. And so Marion's like, okay, if you're gonna have to beat Shiner to leave Saya. Use the cloth. Because he tries to fight without using the cloth, but, he pulls it out, but it doesn't help him to begin with, because he initially feels super fast, like he can go faster than Mach 1, but he's immediately then punched in the guts by Shiner and lies on the floor, complaining in his head that the arm is too heavy. He, like, feels super powerful, but the arm is too heavy, and Marin explains that the arm won't work on its own, you have to power it with your own cosmos from within. And then
killing him slowly.
Yeah. The bunch of the other knights show up and they're like, Shiner, you don't bother yourself with this punk. We'll finish him off. And they start kicking him. But then they discover that he is literally burning with passion. He is super heated with the
That's a great moment.
Yes.
It really is.
Yes, he punches all of the dudes who were kicking him and then breaks Shiner's mask by the air pressure alone of his punches on these other dudes.
As you do.
Yes. And then he comments to her in a way that he probably should not have done, saying, I thought you were going to be ugly, but you're really pretty.
I love mask designs like that, where it's like one character's like an alternate color or an alternate pattern that, you know, like inverts itself, and it looks super cool. It doesn't. What's is Golgo 13's obviously before that? What's the ones in Golgo 13 called?
I don't know.
I think the silver, gold and silver.
I can't remember.
Oh well, they have alternating. Well, obviously one's gold and one's silver. I just love masked characters. I think
they are good designs. The pair of them,
yeah,
Shiner and Marin, and yeah. Marin points out, you just go over there and you can get to Athens and then you can catch your flight back to Japan. And then we get a montage of dudes he assumingly is going to have to fight during this galactic tournament.
They look tough, mind.
Run the end credits, run the preview. you've been thrown straight into the action with Saint Seiya. And, yeah, there's a whole lot of violence. Like I say, Fist of the North Star is the thing that it feels the most comparable to, except, of course, it's not like a big, burly, roided up dudes beating each other up. It's this skinny little Japanese teenager. If he's even a teenager, because 6 years ago he was tiny.
Yeah, I was trying to work out his age, actually, thinking about it. And the other thing that got me was the fact they kept referring to it as a cloth, but then when it comes out, it's armor, and I'm thinking, hang on, why do they call it cloth? I was like, is that like a translation thing? Or I think it is legitimately meant to be cloth. But...
Yeah, Sensei fandom wikia tells me that Seiya is 13 years old.
What, when we see him fighting?
Yeah.
He's been training from...
Seven.
So he was like 7 years old, getting beaten up by a dude.
He was getting pounded when you see the little scenes where he's fighting. What was the big guy called?
Cassius.
Cassius, that was
yes, it. Yes, he has apparently been beating him up for 6 years constantly.
Poor kid.
But it's okay because he chopped his ear off.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it's quite the thing. And this was one of the missing big Shonen Jump shows. I think this may have been the last of the big Shonen Jump shows from the 80s that I saw. I've watched this episode. It's maybe the third time I've watched this episode. I haven't really watched any more than this episode. Cause I think I watched it when it first came back on to Crunchyroll, a few years back. But, yeah, it was nice revisiting again. And to be reminded just how bloody it is in a way that you don't see. I mean, we've occasionally had it in One Piece recently, but even that's not been consistent. Like, maybe they got into trouble for doing it. I don't know, but,
different times.
It is different times.
Do we know what sort of time this would have aired?
I normally write that down and I've neglected to do it this time round.
I was just thinking, is this like tea time, you know, kids time, or would this be a sort of later showing? Cause it was, yeah, it was quite... First thing in the morning on a Saturday, yeah, you're chopping off fish.
As it's Saturday, it will either be, I think, first thing or sometime in the evening. Let me take a look at the old Japanese Wikipedia page, which normally is pretty good at telling you what time it aired. It aired 7 o'clock in the evening.
Oh.
Oh, there you go. It's practically watershed in Japan, surely.
The manga's very good for that. Like, what I read of it, I was like, wow, this is pretty good.
Yeah, that's not on the Shonen Jump app, is it yet?
It must have been... Comixology must have had it free once, or maybe just it was in a sale once. So I was like, oh, I'll pick it up. And I read a decent chunk of it, of the first volume. Let's double check. That's going to bug me. But yeah, it follows like the same story, but I'm sure it's like paced differently. I think you get...
Yeah, this has
none
a lot...
of the stuff when he's already got the armor. It's like all the setup.
Yeah, I know the anime changes some things around. It has a whole bunch of filler and they have like a massive change of the production staff at some point as well.
Oh, okay.
I was just thinking that. I imagine this is, in terms of the fact it had quite a few sequels, films, etc. I'm not surprised if Seiya is one of 88 saints, then that's a hell of a lot of other saints that you can put into stories.
So you can buy it digitally through Viz, so you probably get it through Comixology as well. But
Did it used to be the Dark Horse hat? No, they kind of done a few.
No, it's you can buy it on the Viz.com site.
Right.
So you can get it through you can buy it in the Shonen Jump app, but it's not part of the Shonen Jump subscription.
Maybe that's how I've picked, cause it's not on my Comixology, but as I say, I've definitely had it on this iPad. With official means as well, no nefarious.
Yeah.
Downloads or anything. this is a good start.
It is a good start.
Really good start in time.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it was a pleasant surprise, because I was like, well, it must be good, because it wouldn't be so incredibly popular if it wasn't good. But would it be my cup of tea? And it turns out it's kind of my cup of tea.
Why did this never... Because obviously we got like Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z. This could have made it big in this country.
Well, it made it big everywhere else, same as Dragon Ball. It's like and Ranma, and yeah, so it's everywhere else in the in Europe. I think it did pretty well.
Did it get a run over here?
No. This would have never been allowed to be shown on British TV in the 80s. Well,
I think it heavily edited it.
What would he lose instead of an ear?
A lollipop. I was trying to work out whether I would have liked this, given I would have been five. I'm thinking, actually, as a five-year-old, maybe the blood might have been a bit too much.
No, pretend you were 11.
Yeah.
Or 10.
Oh, if I was 10 or 11, I'd be lapping this up.
Yeah, exactly.
If I was 32, I'd be lapping it up.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, like, I'm pushing 40 and I thoroughly enjoyed this. I was like, it was one of those things where I watched it and I was thinking, wow, because I've never, ever watched or looked at any of the Saint Seiya media. And I watched this and I was like, this is actually pretty good. I kind of feel like I missed out on a big chunk of good anime here.
Then, now we're on to Gary's choice. It is Ranma ½, author Rumiko Takahashi's first ongoing series, Urusei Yatsura, debuted in 1978 in the pages of Weekly Shonen Sunday. Her next major series, Meizen Ikkoku, debuted in 1980 in Big Comic Spirits. In 1981, Urusei Yatsura debuted as a TV anime, with Meizen Ikkoku following in 1986. Her third major series, Ranma ½, debuted in Weekly Shonen Sunday in 1987, the year Urusei Yatsura ended. Like the two previous series, it had a TV adaptation produced by Studio Deen, debuting on Fuji TV in 1989. Running for a mere 18 episodes, it was cancelled. Just for a month before a second series, Ranma ½ Nettohen was launched, which lasted a more robust 143 episodes. It was accompanied by two theatrical features and followed by various OVA series and a third theatrical feature. A live-action special aired on TV in 2011.
There was also a video game on the Super Nintendo that I played a hell of a lot as
yes,
a teenager.
Yes, I bought it as a someone in their 20s. It inexplicably got a UK release.
Yeah, that was baffling.
Via Ocean. I think it was the third one of the Ranma ½ beat-em-ups. The series follows the trials and tribulations of teenage martial artist Ranma Saitome and his father Genma attempts to marry him off to one of the daughters of his old friend Suen Tendo. This is made all the more difficult than it should be due to a series of cursed Chinese pools that assorted characters have fallen into, causing them to change shape when they come into contact with cold water. This first episode originally aired Saturday, April the 15th, 1989. How old would you have been in 1989 on this date, Gary?
On this date, I would have still been 8.
How about you, Anthony?
What month did you say, sorry?
April 15th, 1989.
Yeah, I'd have been 2. No, 1? I'd have been 1.5.
And I would have been 13.
Gosh.
And it's a Saturday, so kids' programs. This is what me and Gary were watching.
Prime time.
Anthony.
I may have been sat in front of the telly for a little bit.
Distracted by moving things.
Yeah.
Saturday starts here with Peter Simon, where we've got Ovid Video.
Awesome. Another epic intro.
See, this is why I put the 11 years cut-off point. Because this is where these new cartoons come in, and I remember not liking them.
What? How could you... Like, Ovid Video had... it was another one of those shows that had a super catchy intro. That, like, I would sit and sing along to because I was 8. So, you know, that's what we did. Like, and this one, the cartoon was actually as good as the show. It was bizarre, like it was kind of Count Duckula levels of bizarre, but great fun. From what I remember anyway. I've not watched Ovid Video in recent years.
My impression of it was my impression was that it was some sort of European cartoon which had been dubbed in a way that I was like, I felt like they were making the best of what they could do.
It was like, it was kind of before Teletubbies. This was Teletubbies levels of weird, because you would just have random TV sets that would just like come out of the ground on poles or come out of the sky on poles randomly with characters. And I remember there was like two villains, and their names were like Psy and who's the other guy? Bobo. I think Bobo was the big guy and Psy was the snake, of course. I can't actually remember what their whole mission was. Like, I remember their mission was to like cause trouble for Ovid and the gang, but like as to why, don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, this was produced by Canadian animation studio Ciné Group in association with Belgium's Odek Kid Cartoons. There you go. So my suspicions were correct. Or I probably guessed that from the fact that those names were probably in the credits. I mean, I still watched it. It was a cartoon, but,
according to Classic, the website Classic Kids TV, which funnily enough has got the lyrics to the opening song, they never released Ovid on DVD, and the only place that ever got it on media was the UK. We got it on VHS tape.
Yeah, I knew that. It was definitely VHSs, because
I existed and wanted them, of course.
Then you had Roland's Rat Race, starring Roland Rat with Nicholas Parsons, RIP. The final, the conclusion after 7 weeks of high-octane racing. I do not recall this at all.
Wait, the rat race ended?
Apparently so.
I hope Kevin won.
It was a quiz, I think, judging by the... it was also a Commodore 64 video game. But looking at the YouTube video for it, it looks like it was some sort of children's quiz show. Then, after that, it was going live, the last in the series, with Sarah Green and Philip Schofield, and featuring Trevor and Simon, with special guests Jason Donovan and Kylie Minogue live in the studio.
Wow.
Elton John and Nick Kershaw are on tour in Europe.
Nick Kershaw's all over.
Nick Kershaw is unstoppable. What cartoons would have going live had?
I don't know, he's not telling me here. It's not telling me, unfortunately, which cartoons. Going live... I can't remember what the name of the website is, which has got all the information about these Saturday morning shows. I feel like it'd be something lame, like Kissy Fur or something.
Oh, God. Hopefully not.
But, yeah, no mention here, unfortunately. Then, in the evening, of course, it's time for our... obligatory sexual predator show up. It's Rolf Harris's Cartoon Time.
I used to love that show.
Yes, I did as well, but I didn't love it as much as when it was replaced by Stay Tuned. Stay Tuned was so much
that
better.
That takes me back.
Because Tony Robbins had actually tried to teach you about who made cartoons.
Was Heartbeat before or after Rolf Harris's Cartoon Time, in terms of it when it was airing?
Good point, because it was Take Heart before it was Heartbeat. So it was something else
Heart,
before
I
that.
I was probably a bit too young to have seen Take Heart. I distinctly remember Heartbeat.
But those were weekday. They were weekday actual.
See, I've never known that television show as well. Heartbeat. Ever. I've always... Yeah. So when you said Heartbeat, I was like, well, yeah, Heartbeat was years later with...
Nick Berry.
Oh, God.
So which I was like, I didn't know it was ever not known as... Yeah, okay, well...
I don't want to go too far off on a tangent, but did Take Heart have Morph and Chaz on it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I feel like they were around...
If it did, that's cool. Because obviously, yeah, Heartbeat, for me, that was how, like, me and most of my generation discovered Morph and Chaz, thanks to Tony Hart.
Morph was definitely on Take Heart. I wonder if they introduced Chaz in the Morph series or in Heartbeat.
I think it must be later on, because I don't recall Chaz as clearly as Morph, unless that's just how it rolled.
Chaz was definitely in Heartbeat. Like, I don't know if he evolved in the Morph cartoon, but in Heartbeat, Chaz's whole purpose was to just kind of mess with Morph and annoy Tony Hart.
Oh, they're doing me like they used to, do they?
Although Morph always often annoyed Tony Hart as well, so he couldn't win no matter which way it was.
Maybe I've seen Heartbeat.
Yeah, no, it must have been in Take Heart, because the Amazing Adventures of Morph were 80 and 81, so, and Chaz was definitely in that along with loads of other plasticine, characters. Folly, Gillespie, Grand Morph, Delilah, Nailbrush, Gobbledygook, and the Very Small Children, creatures, not Very Small Children. Early versions of Folly and Gillespie had made a previous brief appearance in Take Heart. I've not seen those for a long time, so I have no idea how they held up. Anyway, so you had Bugs Bunny in The Unmentionables, the Bearies in Rah Rah Ruckus, and Tom and Jerry in Baby Butch. We're on Rolf Harris's cartoon. I don't know who the Bearies are. Probably nothing good if I don't remember. Oh, I'm looking at them here. No.
I don't remember them either.
They're a 1960s Walter Lantz Studios creation.
Okay.
Then you got MacGyver, starring Richard Dean Anderson as 80s action man MacGyver. This episode is called The Heist to retrieve $60 million worth of stolen diamonds. Mac pits his wits against an evil casino owner in the exotic Virgin Islands and battles with a security system. Gary, you seemed like you'd be a MacGyver fan. Were you?
I actually was not. I'm not going to lie. Like, for me, MacGyver was poor man's A-Team.
Yeah, I think I was just happy to see it, because it was like there was very few 80s action shows left, and this may have been the only one going at this point.
Yeah, I for whatever reason, I wasn't watching MacGyver, so I could only assume something else was on elsewhere.
Yeah.
Although I, at the age of 8, I would have at this point had a Nintendo NES, so who knows, maybe outside of Saturday morning cartoons, I was lost to evening TV.
I think I was definitely watching this because of what followed it, and I definitely watched what followed it. Obviously, if you don't know, MacGyver's thing, its gimmick was our action and our stunts and our plots are more realistic, honest gov, than the A-Team or more fanciful action things were. But I imagine if you myth-busted them, they would still be just as ludicrous. The reason I knew I would have watched that, because I would have watched the following thing. I was very excited for reasons unknown, because I remember probably being disappointed at the end. Morris Minor's Marvelous Motors.
Ooh, Morris Minor.
Written by Tony Hawks and Neil Mullarkey, featuring music from Morris and the Miners. So I think me and my brother love this, because he was the one who bought the Stutter Rap single. But I think I knew Tony Hawks and Morris Minor and the Majors, because that's what the band were actually called, from Wide Awake Club.
You're speaking in riddles.
That's Wide Awake Club was a Saturday
morning
show. You
don't remember the Wide Awake Club?
He won't. He's too small. I think it was finished by this point. He'd be coming up.
Fast asleep.
Was Wackaday on by then?
I don't know.
Wackaday followed Wide Awake Club.
Yeah, there was that very brief period where they tried to replace it with TV Mayhem, Chris Evans' first TV show. And then I think there was like a strike and, not because of it, but then it never came back after the fact.
I like the idea of people demanding Timmy Mallett be returned to their screens.
I did love Timmy Mallett, but didn't he not have his own thing?
He was Wackaday. He was on the, if it was a holiday, he'd be on the weekday morning slot during the holiday.
Is he still alive?
I thought he was.
He is, yes.
He's still alive, still performs at like, student I think he's bars around, and weddings and stuff.
Yeah, I think he's around my neck of the woods, because isn't he an Oxford City fan? Or Oxford United fan?
I thought Timmy Mallett was still part of the Wide Awake Club, though, before Wackaday, because that was it Neil Buchanan and...
Yes, he was, it was Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd was the lord of Wide Awake Club.
I love when
Neil Buchanan came in on number 73. That was where Neil Buchanan's break was.
Ah, yes.
Him and Sandy Togsvig. And also that, what's her face, the really successful and acclaimed movie director was on there as a presenter as well. Can't remember her name now. And a bunch of people who've not gone on to anything notable. But
oh, Michaela Strachan did join Wide Awake Club later.
Yes, she did, yeah.
I was just a quick Wikipedia check.
But Wide Awake Club is also where probably the earliest TV appearance of, well, one of the earliest TV appearances of Mike Myers as well. Because he would be on there with Neil Malarkey doing poor improv.
for Why children. How did they manage to get him? Like, or, well,
because he was just in
more like
the UK.
How did he manage to get the job?
Yeah, I think, yeah, probably just people going down the comedy store and grabbing improvisers and dragging them on to be on a TV show.
According to the wiki, it said that Neil Malarkey was on the show for a brief time and he had a segment where it was a parody called The Sound Asleep Club, during which he sported pajamas and bed hair, and his roles included making earrings out of spoons, tapes, and string, and making a glass of water during a cookery section. So, primetime TV right there.
Yeah. Anyway, Morris Minor's Marvelous Motors is most notable because it's got Andy Serkis in it. That's the... he was one of the... main characters playing Sparky Plug, and his mum was played by Una Stubbs. I have no idea whether you can watch this on YouTube or anywhere like that. No, appears not to be. Someone has taken the vinyl of the theme tune and uploaded it, but don't appear to be any actual episodes of it. The other thing is, it's the people playing. Like, the supporting characters aren't the other people in the band. It's also got Billy Piper's mum from Doctor Who in it as well. I think as the love interest. Cool. Then we've got Bob Sayers Opportunity Knocks. The Return of Opportunity Knocks, this time with Bob Monkhouse presenting it.
He's a cracking horse, mind you.
He was, yes.
Really good.
This is the version of it I remember.
Yeah, I think the other one even would have predated me, so. Even I'm not old enough to remember the original. this is the version I remember. Because what was there was like an ITV thing around the same time that...
New Faces.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, random tidbit of info for you. I'm pretty sure New Faces launched the career of Peter Andre.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think he did a Jackson 5 cover.
They're the ones.
Don't ask why that's in my brain. It is. There you go. Now it's in yours.
Yeah, I can't remember anybody of note that came up in this series. Wikipedia is telling me that Lee Evans was rejected and didn't make it past the initial audition.
Oh, an Opportunity Knocks.
On this version, yes.
Wow, brutal.
Then there's a Columbo.
I used to like Columbo as a kid, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, like, I recommend.
I was really into, like, the whole kind of murder mysteries. Like, as a sort of child, late childhood into early teens, I was all about things like Columbo. I used to watch Poirot. I used to watch all of that stuff. I think it's my parents' fault, but yeah.
Yeah.
I like Columbo.
I mean, I'm the same. And I think Columbo, because Columbo's the thing at least my parents, or. Maybe it was my grand. Anyway, you've watched some detective shows, and then you're like, well, now you want to watch this one, because this is what's different, because they show you who did it at the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which blows your mind when you're a little kid, and you've seen other detective shows, and it's something not playing by the rules. Anyway, I have them all on DVD. I bought the complete box set for like £20.
Can't go wrong.
No, exactly. Because some of those early ones are so good. It's like the first episode is directed by Steven Spielberg. So, they're pretty great. I don't know who Martin Landau did it in this one. Apparently, using electrical appliances in the bathroom can be very dangerous. Then you got Midnight Caller in the evening. I don't think I've ever saw this. This was a show which felt like, oh, this is. This is for adults. I don't want to watch this. but it's probably really good. It's got Gary Cole as the main character. I love Gary Cole now as an adult. I watch whenever Gary Cole shows up as a guest star in something, I was like, excellent, this episode's going to be great. It's got Gary Cole in it, so maybe I should go back and watch Midnight Caller.
Is it like a radio? It looks like a radio host or
yes,
something?
Yes, it is,
or...
yeah. Okay. Is there anything of interest on BBC Two, though, that we would have watched? Oh, a one-year-old. There's something called... There's a cartoon. Was it quarter to three? Don't know what it was. Sky at Night, World Snooker. Felt like every weekend had snooker on BBC Two as a child.
When I was a child as well, like, it was a staple.
Rapido was on at 23:25. That'd be too late for me to watch, but I may have watched it if Def 2 had started at this point. It probably did. I think I definitely would watch Rapido. In the early evening version. And the UK number one was Eternal Flame by the Bangles.
Mighty fine song.
It is a good one.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
And instead of all that, though, if we were in Japan, we could have been watching episode one of Ranma One Half. Here's Ranma! Directed by Tomomi Mochizuki. Who would do House of the Five Leaves, Here is Greenwood, and Tsutomu Shibayama, who has done many, many, many Doraemon films. The episode in question was directed by Tomomitsu Mochizuki, which I assume is a different spelling of Tomomi Mochizuki's name. He also did the storyboard. The screenplay is by Yoshio Urasawa, who we've run into on Fushigi Yugi and Tokyo Pig. And character design is by Atsuku Nakajima, who we've run into on Haunted Junction.
Ooh.
Our main characters, we have the male version of Ranma, played by Kappei Yamaguchi, who most people now know as Usopp from One Piece, or Shinichi Kudo from Detective Conan. And Megumi Hayashibara is playing Ranma Sayatome. I think this is her breakout role in the female form. And we know her as Lena Inverse and Lime from Saber Marionette J.
Oh, I like that.
And our love interest, Akane Tendo, is played by Noriko Hidaka, who was the love interest Minami Asakura in Touch. And she was Belmere, another dead mom from One Piece.
Two for two.
Yeah. I've been forgetting to talk about the theme tunes. Yeah, never mind. We'll get to that if I remember. I should do it after Gary tells us what happens in episode one of Ranma One Half.
So I'm trying to remember the character name now of what the girl's father was called, but basically the story goes that, Ranma and his, was it his father or was it his grandfather?
It's his father, Genma.
It is his father. It's just he was an old man. I wasn't sure. Well actually, he's
a panda.
He's not always an
Fathers
old man.
Fathers can be old.
He's a panda for most of it. So, like, the opening of the show basically shows you female Ranma fighting a giant panda. And at first, it's not clear why the two of them are fighting, and the fight kind of sprawls out for a little while, and a few people recognize the panda. But ultimately, the reason they're fighting is that, Ranma's father has decided that it's time for Ranma to take a fiancé. So they are off to meet one of his longtime friends because his friend has got three daughters. And the idea is that Ranma should be picking one. But Ranma is not keen on this plan, hence the fighting. So they then obviously go there, they meet up. Meanwhile, with the girls, two of the three girls, Akane being the one that isn't so keen on the idea of a guy coming to see them. The other two girls are kind of keen and asking all sorts of questions about Ranma. Because they've obviously been told by their father that he's coming, his long old visit, and that he will potentially pick one of the three of them if he likes them. But Akane is very vocal about the fact that, you know, they should have a say in the matter that, you know, what's this all about? Forced marriage, forced love, blah, blah, blah. So shenanigans happen because, of course, when Ranma and Ranma's father arrive, Ranma is not in his boy form, he's in his girl form, and his father is not in his human form, he's in his panda form. So, needless to say, shenanigans ensue because the girls are quite confused by this. What I thought was quite interesting was that when Akane realizes that Ranma's actually a girl, and their initial reaction is that clearly their father got it wrong, she quite likes Ranma, and they get on well, and they have a little sparring match, because seemingly everybody in this show is a martial artist. And yep. they actually do a little sparring session, and she discovers that Ranma's actually very skilled at martial arts. But unfortunately, it all goes a bit wrong when Ranma decides to go and have a bath. Because when Ranma has a bath, the water, I think it's the cold water, turns him back. Is it the
cold water's back. Yeah, hot water's back, cold. Because it has to be the most common type of water they're going to run into is going to turn them into the weird forms. So yeah, it's cold turns them into the whatever the curse was. Hot turns them back.
Hot turns them back, yeah. So when Ranma gets into the hot bath, he turns back into his human form. The problem is that Akane decides to take a bath shortly afterwards and doesn't think it's going to be an issue that Ranma's in there because, you know, Ranma's a girl. And then, as you can imagine, it's at that point that Akane walks into the bathroom without any clothes on, that Ranma's getting out of the bath in his male form without any clothes on. And then, needless to say, a fight breaks out. And it's all kind of crazy. At this point, they then finally kind of sit everybody down and explain the reason why Ranma switches from a boy to a girl and back again. And they also explain why his father switches from a human to a panda. And ultimately, at this point, it's despite the fact that this is happening, there's almost a suggestion from both the fathers that Ranma and Akane have kind of hit it off and that she should become his fiance, but neither he nor her are convinced because she thinks he's a pervert and he thinks she's crazy. But yeah, I think that's it. Did I miss anything?
No, I think that's it
because yeah. It surprised me how slow it was.
Yeah, we watched this recently.
When you explain it, it sounds very quick, but it was actually the amount of fighting kind of pads it out a bit.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say we watched it recently, Anthony, but I had to break it to you. We watched it almost 5 years ago.
Wow.
4.5 years ago, but it was more.
Oh, well, that's slightly better.
September the 9th, 2015 was when the podcast came out.
Oh. Damn it. Because it feels like very memorable. As things happen, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this, I know what's coming next, and all this stuff, so.
Yeah, like, wow. I think for me it was quite interesting to finally watch it, because Ranma was one of those shows where I've known about it since I was a teenager and I've had the video games, never actually bothered to sit and watch the anime. And I think one of the things that struck me immediately was I was quite shocked at the amount of nudity that was in it. Because in my head, having only had the video games, I was like, oh yeah, Ranma's like a fighting TV show. And I didn't know too much about the romantic interest. I knew about the curses because that's brought up in the anime with the other characters that are brought in because there's a lot more people that change when they're covered in water later on. So I was quite surprised at the whole marriage thing being the actual driver for the show. But yeah, it was quite funny. It was, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's less of the driver as the show goes along. It is more of what wacky character is going to show up next.
That's a shame.
What wacky martial art can we get into next? As you say, this is a world where everybody's a martial artist. You'll have rhythmic gymnastics martial arts. You'll have, there's even like a tea ceremony martial artist. And you say you have the various, the guy, I've never got as far in the comic or the anime as to the guy who's in that video game who managed to fall in the pool where I think four different animals had all drowned in the same pool at once.
So what, is he like a big?
He turns into like a really weird thing, yes.
What do you call them things from mythology?
Chimera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the one with, like, the ox head?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the character you mean, and yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was also curious, because I remember there was a character in the game that whose name was King, and he was literally looked exactly like a king off of a standard deck of playing cards. So I was thinking that must have been a curse, that he fell into a cursed pool.
No, I think he just looks like that.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking
there was going to be an episode where there was like someone dropped a deck of cards in the cursed pool and that guy fell in.
Yeah, because I've not seen much of the anime, but I have read a decent chunk of the comic, because this is a rare case where, while it's not the anime that made me, the comic is kind of one of the things which got me hooked into Japanese comics and anime in around about 94, I'd say. 93, 94, I think. Yeah, I was definitely... But the comic is quite repetitive after a point.
Do they ever marry?
Oh, no, there's no ending.
I think I'll probably ask this.
There's no ending. Off. Yeah, this is like Yurusaisura. There's no ending. If you want an ending, you've got to go with Maze Naikoku. You've got to go with Maze Naikoku.
Oh, right, okay.
And I think there's like, aside from the three girls, there's more suitors that turn up later.
Yes.
Because I definitely remember Shampoo.
Yes, Shampoo.
I always remember that character name, because as a teenager I was like, there's a character in this game called Shampoo.
Shampoo is essentially Lum, done the way that Rumiko Takahashi wanted to do Lum in the first place, but made the mistake of introducing her in the very first chapter, whereas she gets introduced much later. And so it's... She works better as like the threat to the relationship rather than the actual relationship, as it turned out in Yurusaisura.
She's another fun character, because in my head I was like reading some of the synopsis for the later episodes. I was like, I really should watch more of this, because I was reading the part. There's a part that happens later on where a new Shampoo was a potential suitor for the male Ranma, but what I didn't realize is that something happens that means Shampoo has a obligation as part of her family heritage that she must kill the female Ranma. So she's got to kill the female Ranma, but marry the male Ranma. And I can imagine that being quite comical.
And then her suitor shows up, Moose, who turns into a
moose.
Duck.
He turns into a
duck. Yes.
Yeah.
Shampoo turns into a cat. Yes.
Ah, okay.
Ranma's rival, I think, shows up immediately after this. Ryoga, who turns into a pot-bellied pig. Or more like a piglet. And who else turns into things? I can't remember now. And those are the main ones, group are. I think then the gag is that one character down the line who's fallen into the pool of ridiculous amounts of things. But yeah, then you've got Shampoo's grandmother, you've got Hapusai, who's the teacher of the two dads, who has a relationship with Shampoo's grandmother. We've got those two old characters warring against each other, which adds further to the rivalry. Then you've got, the Kendo Club, student who's in love with Akane and who's like a ridiculous... He's the Mendao of this story. There's lots of like equivalents of Yurusaisura characters, but different personalities, but they slot into like the same roles. And then his sister, and then there's the Kamurana Ukyo, who's like the chef martial artist. I can't remember what her connection with Ranma is. But then there's a whole load of characters, like I said, who I've not, and eventually the mum shows up. That's way down the line. Basically a lot of it is like the two dads just being absolutely terrible, ruining their children's lives.
It seems reasonable in this, in theory. It's just a marriage.
There's the doctor who the oldest sister's in love with. He's like a main recurring character as well. But this moves so slow. Maybe I was like, I can see why they cancelled it if the remaining 70 episodes were this slow. And I don't think I've seen any of the ones, subsequent ones to know if it picks up speed a bit better. I know it has a different director. It has, like, Eurosight Zero directors come back on, I think, for the subsequent 143 episodes. Because it reminded me a bit of, like, how slow Maizena Koku, the anime, plays compared to the comic. But at the same time, it was so slow, I wanted to go back and read the comic again. Because I was like... I remember why I liked Ranma. And also, if I'm gonna like Ranma, I'd rather read the version I remember liking.
Yeah. Especially if you can get through it quicker.
At the same time. But, again, I should probably just buy the other Eurosight Zero volumes off Comixology instead.
Treat yourself. It's 2020.
Well, I've treated myself. I've got so many volumes of Thor to read after Christmas.
Is that a treat?
It is a treat,
is it
yes.
Good Thor? Is it?
It's the old Stan, it's all the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby Thor. I've got the entire thing because they were like reduced to like $2.99, $3.99 for those massive volumes which are colour on Comixology over Christmas. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah. I'd got one already from like a previous sale. And I was like, I was reading it. I was like, I want to read the next volume. So then I looked, I was like, okay, I guess I'm reading the next volume and all the previous ones as well.
Comixology do a good job of putting sales out. Like, kind of like Steam, you end up, I've bought so much stuff in Comixology that I've not touched yet.
But yeah, I know what you might think that Thor's not that good. Cause Thor was never my favorite Marvel character.
No.
And maybe if I go back to some of those earlier issues, I'll be like, oh, that's why. But where I'd started reading, I think, was where Lee and Kirby were kicking on all cylinders with Thor. It's like
It's
like all the supporting cast, I think, adds to it.
Right.
Where a lot of the interesting stuff isn't Thor. It's the stuff like, oh, a villain's fallen in love with Boulder, and he's kind of fallen in love with her. And how's that story? And like, Thor's getting involved with aliens and their computer and their android, and this android's become Thor's best buddy. And it's kind of pretty good in like a weird Jack Kirby way. It's like this android called the Recorder, who's basically just sent to observe. And yeah, he just kind of becomes Thor's best friend. And Odin constantly sometimes you're like, I see Odin's point here, and sometimes you're like, Odin, stop being such an awful dad.
Has this era got like heavy, like Norse influence, or is it literally the characters are plonked into?
Well, they do like the Norse stories as well. So there's like one.
That's what interests me.
They do like their versions of traditional tales.
Yeah, that's good.
But there's other great things of like Canilla from the Norns, who's the one which falls in love with Balder. She basically, Loki's been exiled and he's living on Earth, and this guy, the Wrecker, he calls himself, he's the king of breaking and entering, breaks into the flat where Loki's sleeping and tries on Loki's hat. And in the dark, Carnilla mistakes Wrecker for Loki and ends up granting Wrecker the power intended for Loki. And that's how the villain, the Wrecker, becomes. He's like, that's how he gets his superpowered crowbar. It's just because he's happened to have broken into Loki's flat at the time. And he's like, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Because I always liked the Wrecker, but I don't think I'd ever read his origin. Because I always thought he'd been deliberately given the power in the similar way to when Loki gives the Absorbing Man his power. But now I was like, oh no, that's so much better. The fact that he was just trying on Loki's hat.
The Wrecker looks like an absolute badass.
He is an absolute badass. He's one of my favourite Marvel Kirby designs.
I was about to say, like, is he in any of the like Marvel like MCU stuff?
No,
like, even as a,
not yet.
Not even as a cameo.
Not yet.
He just looks like a lot of fun. Who would play him, though? Sorry to ask the hard question.
I feel like they're going to give Jason Statham a role at some point, but I've got an idea where he might end up, though. That he won't be the Wrecker.
Statham's getting on a bit.
He is, but there's a British character who needs casting in an upcoming film. And it'd be weird having him play it, but at the same time,
he's the only one for the job. Yeah,
I feel like he'd be the best person for the job. Because it would be such a weird choice. And it would be a
Guardian. Is the Wrecker American, I take it?
He is American, yes. Isn't he?
Right.
Yeah, he's just a burglar. A burglar who was already dressing like that before he became a supervillain. But he is just a burglar.
I'm way too invested for somebody I just found out about, like, a minute and a half ago. What's this Wrecking Crew stuff?
That's his... Well, what he ends up doing is he ends up sharing his power with three other dudes. And they become the Wrecking Crew.
Oh, I tell you. Forget the Avengers.
I guess they might show up, because the rumor for the Thor is, it's going to be, obviously the next Thor is, it's going to be, Natalie Portman as Thor, isn't it?
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. It's kind of adapting some of the Jason Aaron stories.
Right.
Jane Foster ends up with the power of Thor.
Oh.
And, rumors Christian Bale's gonna be playing a villain, so I suspect he's gonna be playing, Dario Agger, the Minotaur. He's like this evil, Minotaur businessman.
Mm. Oh, that sounds good. I mean, so, he's got a similar hairline.
I thought I'd read they were gonna put, Beta Ray Bill in there.
I think that's just hopeful, wishful thinking.
Oh, boo. I thought I'd seen a casting thing about it. Yeah, that'd be nonsense then.
I thought that Valkyrie girl had the Thor power now.
Oh, yeah, she's going to be in the next one as well. But no, I think the idea.
Right.
I think, Taika said it's going to be. It was a Comic Con they announced that, because I think he handed, like, Thor's hammer to Natalie Portman at the Comic Con thing.
Oh, right. That makes sense. Love and Thunder, that's what it's called. Yeah. See, I like that, because it seems like they're going to have a lot of fun, rather than having to do all the Thanos stuff still, thankfully.
Yeah, I see all these people saying, oh, now it's time to step, now they're doing the Thanos stuff, like, I'm going to step off watching Marvel films. I was like, now they've done the Thanos stuff, I'm more excited than ever, because they can now just get extra weird and not have to worry about feeding into the Avengers each time.
Yeah, I'm on board.
So the opening theme is Jaja Uma Ni Sasanai Day by Etsuko Nishio, who was a model at the time, later an actress, and she retired in the 90s. And the ending theme is by Kaori Sakagami. It's called Platonic Suranuite. Yeah, she was an idol singer at the time, and she turned to acting as well in the 90s. And has either retired or stopped getting work after 2008. Don't know why I wrote 2009, but it was 2008. Yeah, it's currently leading the way for me, Saint Seiya. Ranma didn't do it so much for me, but hey, let's find out. All about Anthony's choice now. Berserk.
Berserk. You've got to say it, yeah.
Beginning in 1989 in the pages of Monthly Animal House. Kentaro Miura's Berserk manga is still ongoing today in the pages of Young Animal, with the collected volumes currently totaling 40. In 1997, as part of NTV's late night anime lineup, a 25-episode long anime adaptation of the Golden Age arc aired, produced by OLM. A second adaptation of the same material made up a trilogy of films produced by Studio 4 Degrees C, in 2012 and 2013. A second anime TV series ran for 24 episodes in 2016 and 2017, finally adapting some manga material that wasn't the Golden Age. Readers have been waiting since August the 23rd, 2019, for a new chapter of the comic.
And will it ever end?
Well, they just got left hanging?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's put out like a one-shot or something as well since then of non-Berserk things. So this aired Tuesday, October the 7th, 1997, 25:15 in the morning. So technically...
1:15?
Quarter past one, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Technically Wednesday.
I've seen time written down like that.
That's how they write it on Japanese schedules. So what was Anthony not watching as we discovered... Plenty of times that he'd never watched the BBC.
Watch anything that, yeah. Though this list Go ahead, but this list looks more like... Well, I'm going to say yes to a few things.
Let's find out how old we all were first. Gary, how old were you? October 97.
October 1997, I would have been 16.
Anthony?
9 going on 10.
And I would have been 22.
I don't know. I always have a big sigh every time I hear it, but I know exactly that you're much older, so I don't know why I'm shocked every time. Yeesh.
Where would I have been? I'd have been... Yeah, I was in work now, so no longer at university.
What, at this time of the morning as well, or?
So on BBC One, Anthony, what do you got over school? Could I watch Playdays?
Probably. I believe I watched a good bit of Playdays.
I was going to say, you were probably too old though at this point for watching Playdays. You'd be like, it's for babies, not watching that at this age.
Yeah, probably.
Arthur, The Stories of a Young Aardvark.
I never liked Arthur, and especially as I got older, I think I maybe went in and out of it, but I always felt it was a bit too serious for like the age I was at this point anyway.
Then something called Fudge, American live action comedy about a boy whose outrageous behavior complicates his elder brother's life.
I don't know that.
Gary, any idea on Fudge?
No, like I have never heard of that. At all.
I have never heard of it either. Obviously, I've heard of fudge. It's the it's the popular snack. Sitcom? Let's see if that helps.
Even on the images, it does not look familiar.
Fudge is probably one of the most underrated Cadbury bars.
Yeah, I think you're right. How much are they nowadays?
10p.
They're still quite cheap. No, they can't be 10p.
They can't be 10p.
Yeah. Freddo's a 10p. There's no way Fudge is 10p.
26 pence.
Sounds about right. It's based on a series of Judy Blume books. And it ran for 24 episodes. That is followed by The Queen's Nose.
Now we're talking.
About a teenage girl on a magical coin.
What?
Yeah, it was really good. You've never seen The Queen's Nose?
I don't think I have.
She used to rub the Queen's nose and it would, I can't remember if it granted a wish or just, we must have given like a wish effect and she would, do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's based on a Dick King Smith novel. Which I think maybe.
I don't think it ran very long though in my head.
It ran for.
Oh, 5 seasons apparently.
7 series, 44 episodes.
Well, 44 episodes total. Yeah. I mean, still quite a lot for
they
this.
They ran between 1995 and 2003, so...
I'd stopped long
very much
before
the opposite
that point.
Of what you just said.
Is it the same... Yeah, I'm just talking garbage. Is it the same actress who was across the world?
Let's see.
She must have just...
It looks like
it
somebody else gets the Queen's nose at some point.
Right. Oh, and she's maybe like the older kid who like guides them morally to use it well or something.
Oh, she's just written out the series and because she had to go to university or something.
Nah, she was made. In fact, is she not in something else now? The main character, the main actress out there.
Well, she doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so perhaps not.
There's someone who I saw was in a film, and I was like, who is that? And it turned out they were in something like that.
I'm looking at somebody else. That first person listed isn't actually the main character for some reason. Victoria Chalet was the main character in the first 4 series.
Uh-huh.
What is she in now? She was in Doctors.
There was something not like large scale, but it was a case of like, oh, is that her from that? Ah, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's everybody else. I recognise the names, but that wouldn't be noticeable.
Yeah. Either way, good show. Good show.
Yeah, I don't think I ever read the book. Obviously, I never saw the series because I was at work. But I did like the Dick King Smith books. I suspect it was just like at that my age at that time, I wasn't going to read the one about a girl. Then news round, then Biker Grove, continuing the children's drama. Harry is arrested and Ed leads a trip to a spooky warehouse.
Don't remember that one.
No. Nor do I, because I, again, stopped watching at this point. Then you got 6 o'clock news, regional news magazine. Oh, sorry, Neighbours, we forgot that, but there's no description of Neighbours here. Although, if you go back to the midday, Ruth offers Anne a shoulder to cry on and Sarah suffers a crisis of confidence. Then you've got Holiday Memories, a series in which celebrities and members of the public revisit memorable holiday destinations presented by Carol Smiley.
This isn't the worst kind of thing.
Don't recall this at all.
And I hear when people show me, like, holiday photographs, and every photograph has a story. This is that in TV form.
And this is a Tuesday, so we would have been in. So I guess something else was on ITV.
Anything.
Yeah. Maybe Corrie, because I think this might have been during Corrie watching times. EastEnders, Carol worries about protecting her family, and Mark and Ruth welcome Jesse into their home.
Yeah, no.
No. Mysteries with Carol Vorderman. Again, I don't recall this at all.
The Carols are in full force. Smiley, Vorderman.
It's a strong time for Carols.
Yeah.
She presents drama reconstructions and location reports to examine real-life mysteries from around the world. I think there is some of this on YouTube, for the curious.
It doesn't seem like the kind of thing anybody would think, ooh, I wonder what was going on with that show. Let's give it five.
Because there was the other one which I think we ran into, which was more around the X-Files time. But 97 X-Files is still on, but it feels like the peak has gone of, like, the interest in the unknown and the supernatural. But as it's from around the world, I wonder whether it's another country's or like a combination production from multiple different countries and people just stick their own presenter on it.
Oh, like the source, yeah, different sort. Yeah, I get you.
Question of sports. Sue Barker in charge, John Parrott and Ally McCoy star, the team leaders. Then you got 9 o'clock news, followed by Rory McGrath's commercial breakdown. This is also on YouTube. Two episodes of it. And this is a format which multiple people have hosted. I think it was Carrot's commercial breakdown originally, with Jasper Carrot.
Was it looking at, like, funny ads?
It was
or
just funny ads from around the world with very weak connecting material. I have to say,
kind of like Tarrant on TV,
kind of like that. Very cheap. Yeah, because I'm looking it up now. There's Joe Brand's commercial breakdown. It looks like maybe Jimmy Carr had done it as well. Yeah, commercial breakdown with Jimmy Carr. God, that's a fat-looking Jimmy Carr. A collection of the funniest, wildest, and weirdest television adverts from across the globe. It ran for almost 20 years.
Whoa.
Wow.
The Carrot, what, Jasper Carrot era is the only one I remember. But there's, like, I say for 20 years, but there was, like, a gap of three between 93 and 96.
Still, that's a run.
Yeah, so it was Jasper Carrot for the first four, and they were just like one-off specials. Then it was Patrick Keelty, Rory McGrath, Joe Brand, Ruby Wax, Jim Davison, John Coleshaw, and Jimmy Carr. Yeah, I think there was one interstitial joke which I liked in the YouTube video I watched of it. The adverts were fine, because, yeah, some of them were legitimately funny, but it's like, God, such a lazy program. And then Crime Watch. Over on BBC Two, I'm going to guess there were some kids' programmes in the morning. Indeed there were. You could watch Teletubbies.
Which I did.
In which the gang watched children help mend a wall.
Probably seen it.
Probably said again, again, and did it again.
Yes.
Yeah, Smurfs Adventures.
Wait, the Smurfs were still going in, like, 97?
It was a repeat.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah, it wasn't... They used to always stick that kind of thing on.
Yeah. Repeat of Blue Peter, the previous day's program. Then Okie Doke.
Okie Doke.
Don't remember that.
It's a Cosgrove Hall stop-motion animation.
Oh.
I remember not liking it that much because it was a bit boring. Like, it would be something silly like, somebody's lost their wheelbarrow and he'll find it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah. It was alright. I think probably well made, maybe, because it looks fun.
Rupert. The cartoon version. Yeah. A repeat.
I like Rupert the Bear.
And then the first of a two-part Harry and the Henderson story, in which Harry witnesses a murder.
Cool drama.
And Ernie and Brett hatch a plan to catch the killer.
I used to like Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, I think I did, but not for the right I used to just laugh that it was... But
that,
you know,
that was what I was doing, and I was older than you, and I was just laughing at it.
Yeah, perhaps. I was never engaged with the plot. It was like, where's the funny-looking character at?
Ready, Steady, Cook. Going, Going, Gone. That's another show with a sexual predator on it. Stuart Hall this time. Esther Ranson. Today's the Day. Nostalgia Quiz, hosted by Martin Lewis. Heartbreak High.
Oh, I used to watch that as a teenager. It was like an Australian, was it Australian or New Zealand? But it was, it was an Australian drama that wasn't Neighbours or Home
I was going to say, yeah, this is, it's well established that I get this mixed up with something else. Yes, it is Australian.
It could be from anywhere though, in terms of...
It was, like, I'm trying to think of the British equivalent, maybe Hollyoaks? Because all the people in it were ridiculously attractive because it was in, like, some sort of beachy type area.
It's high school, so I guess it's supposed to, it would be like a glamorous Grange Hill.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Like Australia.
People die in Hollyoaks.
Yeah, like I think they're pretty sure they did in Heartbreak High. Like there was fights. Oh. There was one guy that lived in his car because he was broke.
That was the heartbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like students and teachers getting it on. It was all a bit OTT. It was like a
Degrassi.
More mature. It was more like a more mature themed Saved by the Bell. Or like now, Saved by the Bell, the college years, if you ever watched
that. That's when I got, yeah, I watched like everything to do with Saved by the Bell and.
Yeah, this was like Australia does Saved by the Bell. Slightly mature themed, so maybe borderline Beverly Hills. No,
these are 45 minute long episodes.
slow.
I'm just saying, imagine a 45 minute long Saved by the Bell. It would be truly nightmarish.
Well, they did the films. There's like,
yes, I know.
During the summer when I was, honestly, I've watched all of them.
Well, I think I've unfortunately seen a lot of them due to my brother and, or maybe more my brother's mate who was like the biggest Saved by the Bell fan you could imagine.
Oh, I'd love to meet him. I really, really, genuinely really like Saved by the Bell. Always have done.
I'd like to meet Anthony Amber Thearson.
Calm down, Gary.
Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there. That kind of show.
Not that kind of show.
Shake her hand and tell her she was great. That was all.
Conference talk where we get a roundup of the day's events from the Conservative Party conference.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch that now.
Never watch that.
Private investigations continue with the series in which members of the public bearing camcorders investigate a variety of topics.
God.
Pre-YouTube.
This sounds like something that 4 did on 4 later. Like, I want to say, not years later, probably within a couple of years because it had been sort of the end of the 90s. You used to do those little clips where it would be like, a random member of the public and a camcorder and they'd be ranting about something or other and people would give them TV time on like late night on Channel 4.
Delia Smith Winter Collection, Looking Good, a fashion and beauty program. Have I Got Old News For You? This was before there was Dave to put all these things on.
Is that actually what they labelled it as in the guide?
Yes.
I got
another chance to see an episode of the Comedy News Quiz. With guests Martin Clunes and Michael Parkinson. Yeah, Holding On, a drama series set in London, Newsnight, Seinfeld. This is why I've been
joking. What time was Seinfeld on?
Quarter past 11. So I was definitely videoing this. And it was the barber. Jerry is unhappy with his barber, but has trouble when he decides to switch. And George is confused about a job offer. I do remember the, but I do remember the Jerry part of that plot. I'm not sure what George's plot is. I'm sure if I saw it again, I'd know. And
love it.
Larry Sanders' show, it follows it with...
I used to occasionally watch that as well.
Yes. The Bump.
You have left the tape running on that? Would you have watched both?
I'd have watched both, yeah. When comedian Jeff Cesario is dropped from the show for the ninth time, Larry is determined to use him despite stiff opposition. Featuring guest appearances by actors David Duchovny and Rob Lowe. It was David Duchovny episode, so it was bound to be a good one.
Hell yeah.
Have you ever watched the Larry Sanders show?
I've not. It's, just somehow miss everything about it. I don't know where the... Yeah.
There's an ongoing subplot where David Duchovny is clearly in love with Larry Sanders.
Ah.
That's why it would be a good one, you see. You knew that. And then that was followed by Animated 2. With a Sylvain Chomet cartoon. That's your fellow who did Triplets of Belleville, isn't it? Would I have recorded this as well? I don't know. I may have done, but I don't know for sure. It's The Old Lady and the Pigeons. I'd have to watch it to see whether I've seen it before. It does appear to be on YouTube. Probably shouldn't be on YouTube, but it is on YouTube.
Yeah, don't be watching that.
Anyway, what is on in Japan?
Berserk.
Though? It is Berserk. The UK number one was still Something About the Way You Look and Candle in the Wind by Elton John.
Which I still like, I think.
Our director for this project is Nehito Takahashi, who also direct Steel Angel Kurumi and LBX Little Battlers. The screenplay for this episode is by Atsuhiro Tomioka, who wrote many Pokemon, including Pokemon XY, and is also the head writer on Heybot. The episode director is Kazuya Suramaki, director of the rebuild of the Evangelion films and Fooly Cooly. The character design and chief animation director is Norihiro Matsubara, who had a similar role on Gunsmith Cats, but also a similar role on Camp Pikachu and most of Pokemon. And storyboard is Masamitsu Hidaka, who's also known for working on Pokemon, because it's OLM, and this is a year before they started making Pokemon. And so I've forgotten that Berserk is like a dry run for Pokemon.
What a transition.
I was going to say, that is an interesting transition.
There's so much talent crossover, it's quite crazy. Including voice actors as well. So, Anthony, tell us... Oh, I'll start, I should do them as well. Nobutoshi Hayashi is Guts, who played Basara, Neki, and Macross 7. That's the other notable thing.
He's the only kind of going to be the recurring character
in this particular episode.
This point, yeah. Especially. Great. I just want to say a great opening theme.
This is Tell Me Why by Pen Pals. They formed in 96, disbanded in 2005. The three of the original members formed a band called AFOK in last year, and they still perform some Pen Pals.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I quite like the opening theme to this. Sort of like a... I was getting a definite kind of 90s Japanese kind of garage rock band.
Yeah, vibe. I was looking it up online and there's a lot of people going, do you really like the opening theme? Boris, are you having me on?
I think it's great. It's so catchy. If that came on somewhere. Bah, bah, bah,
I know,
bah,
but I feel like bah, if you're bah, like, bah, bah. I feel like if you're a teenager today, it would sound so old and dated.
Oh, it would, like, what's this granddad music playing? Yeah. No, you're right. And the ending theme's, I remember hating the ending theme. Because I've seen this entire series before, so it's a bit of a trick pick. But in fact, no, you'd seen Saint Seiya before, so I'm fine.
Yeah, I've seen
it. And I played the Ranma video games, so.
Yeah, we're all tricksters.
This is the first episode we've done of this where I have seen every single thing we're talking about previously.
But yes, very, very good show. Well, I think. I want to pretend it is. But well, I'll just think about this first episode
for now.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking too deep. Because I did try and go in kind of tabula rasa, essentially, to not remember anything. But it's hard not to. Anyway, it opens with a mysterious figure watching in the shadows, as they do, as a blacksmith works his magic on an unknown weapon at this stage. And the same man kind of wanders into this town and the pouring rain. It's all dark and dingy, and it's setting up the tone of the show. Or at least what you'd want to be the tone of the show until the flashback. Sorry, I need to get that off my chest. Anyway, as he's wandering in, he sees this kind of cart full of sad-looking children and presumably, like, peasant children, you know. It's a poor-looking town. And it cuts to, a tavern, an innkeep, and there's these three thugs, you know, all looking grim. One's got a Hulk Hogan haircut, I think. And they throw a young girl down in the tavern, and obviously everybody in the tavern is like, oh, just ignore it, and people are paying their tabs and running out the bar and all that kind of stuff. And the thugs are just being arseholes, really. An old man enters the tavern, begging for his, you know, let his granddaughter go kind of thing. And they trip him up, he's on the ground, they spill a bit of wine, and they're making her lick it off the table, that kind of stuff, and just being horrible. And enter in the Black Swordsman. I'm just going to start calling him Guts. It's Guts, okay? I don't want to call him the Black Swordsman all the time. And he starts handing out the justice with his crossbow, killing the men, bar one, and he's like, oh, tell your master that the Black Swordsman's here. And one of the men who we thought he killed before with the crossbow tries to attack him, only be cleaved in half by the sword on his back, and that's the thing the blacksmith was working on. And it's a great sword. It's a very, very big great sword. That's a long-running thing throughout the series. And, yeah, so the entire town is now on the hunt for Guts, because the minister finds out he's here, and he's like, oh, well, we've got to find him, basically. And the minister tells... I guess he's a lord. I don't even think he gets named, but I'm going to call him the lord. And he's like, oh, yes, he's finally arrived, the Black Swordsman. At this point, it moves around quite randomly, I suppose. It's a basic story, but it's all over the place in many ways. Now Cuts is outside the town, and he's doing his thing where he's being all moody against a tree, and the cursed mark on his neck, the brand of sacrifice, is kind of pulling in all the evil of from hell to his location at this point. And he sees, like, these visions of unknown beings and really cool designs. Like, obviously that goes without saying. And he sees the Crimson Knight. I'm going to call the Crimson Knight at this point. And, Griffiths! And he slashes away at this, like, vision, and it's just destroying the ghost. He's, like, grabbing him and stuff. The minister at this point is with this lord, and the lord's got this, like, snake-like, like, figure about him. He's not a normal human. It's quite obvious. And you see his armor that he's got, and it's like this huge, like, snake head, and it's gold. It's, what was the bad guy from Conan called?
Oh.
Rathamon or so? Is it Rathamon?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. It's like that, anyway. Anyway, gets on his gear, he heads into town. This is the lord at this point, the snake lord. And, him and his soldiers are just wreaking havoc in the town, plays it on fire. The minister is dead on a pike at this point. It's just chaos. Guts turns up. Out comes some, like, crossbow bolts out of the smoke and the fire. Kills a few of his soldiers. And and then he whips out his sword. And all the men are, like, super surprised because it's enormous. Like, how can one human wield such a large sword? And Guts spots on the lords. The snake lord, a bailet. That's how you say it, isn't it? Bailet.
I think so.
And I've never been really sure how to say it, but that's how they say it. And it's essentially this little, like a necklace pendant, and it's very weird looking. It's got eyes and nose and a mouth, but it's all twisted up, which, if you know the series, it's got a lot more bear on the story. And he manages to do some damage with the crossbow, and he's shooting in, like, into his body, and it reveals the true form of this, like, demon creature, and it's like a big snake, it's like a basilisk with big arms, and it's really quite scary, actually. So if I was a kid, I'm definitely not allowed to watch this. And Gus is just taking so much damage, and the snake lord's like, there's no way you could survive this. No human could take this kind of beating. And he picks him up by the face, well, the head, Gus up by the head, and he's about to eat him. He says, oh, I'm going to devour you and all this stuff. And Gus pulled on a little string of his... Now aware, like now we know his arm, one of his arms is fake, and it's an arm cannon, and it blasts the beast open. There's blood everywhere, and it looks awesome, to be fair. And as this is going on, I think maybe as he's getting shot and stuff with the shrapnel, the Lord sees the brand on his neck, and he's like, "Oh, it's the brand of sacrifice," and he begs for Gut's mercy. Gut obviously gives no satisfaction, and just continues shooting bolts into his face, and he's like split in half at this point. He's a badass. Guts picks up the bailet. He walks off and he turns around at the camera, and then it like goes for a flashback. And, you see a young Guts stood in front of this huge armored Goliath with an axe, and then the credits roll. And I think, cause I've still not finished the manga. I shouldn't base my opinion too much on that.
That's the same as the author, though, so don't worry too much.
Yeah, we're both on the same page. But before I watched this as a kid, when I first saw the series, I want to mention this. I was so hyped to watch it because I expected non-stop Black Swordsman stuff. So, and I feel like I've seen all the flashback Golden Age arc stuff a million times now. So yeah. It's probably a bit. It's really good in the long term, but when you're like, I don't know, however old I was, wanting to see Guts just kill people nonstop, and it's probably good that it isn't just that at this point. It's got a bit of setup, but I think this is a good opening episode that puts you in a false sense of what to expect throughout the show, which is a bit of a shame in ways.
Yeah, I was in exactly the same place as you, Anthony, first time. But now, having watched the movies.
Yeah.
Because I haven't watched the rest of the TV series, but I've seen the story in the movies. I've seen the story in the video game.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, maybe I do want to watch this now, because I do like the gold. Does it tell all the Golden Age?
It gets up to, there's a bit where, I think it's about four episodes from the end that then goes to, you know, when Griffiths gets captured and he's getting tortured and they go in to save him.
Okay, but do they do
the... So it does the a big bulk of it. I don't know if there's certain bits that are cut out. And to be fair, in thinking about it, it probably does a really good job of telling quite a large story. I think it leaves out some of the royal characters who I remember coming into it in the manga. So I think it's not a bad way to watch that because it's only 25 episodes, I think.
Yeah.
I think the last three or four are pretty much when hell opens up and.
Yeah, because there's stuff left out of this episode as well. Like Puck. Puck's nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, he doesn't show.
Which is even weirder in the, comic with this is the first thing you get. And there's this, like, fairy character, and you're like, okay. And then that fairy, yeah, like, fairy character is not going to be seen for a long time again.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of doing it. And I think, I remember finished watching it, and I was like, oh, I need a season two right now, and it didn't happen. But that's fine. It's fine. But what did Gary think, I guess, is probably the best.
I really enjoyed it, and it's a weird one because again, it Berserk's one of those anime that I've heard of for a long time, but never actually got around to sitting and watching. So I sat and watched this, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was weird because I don't know, like, if I'd seen clips or bits and pieces of Berserk, but in my head, I wasn't expecting the dark tone, that certainly this episode, for the majority of it, conveyed. But perhaps that's because you referred to the Golden Age stuff, which I'm guessing is not quite as dark in tone.
Well,
there's no deep. Well, by the end, it's more like people double crossing people. Yes. And
by the end, it's far darker than anything in this episode.
Oh, it goes off the rails.
So it starts, and you just see this sort of descent into where we're at, and then beyond.
Yeah,
but I really enjoyed it. It was I didn't know what to expect, but it was certainly enjoyable. And the I thought, like, certainly the action for Guts and that was really cool. It was like you say, Anthony, it was, you kind of watched it and it was like, yep, I would definitely be up for watching Guts, like, swinging his sword some more and shooting more people with his crossbow.
But none of us would have ever been allowed to watch this. Like, that's a fact.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have been able to watch this. I would have had to, like... As a kid? No. What was the original air date? It was 97. I'd have been okay then. But yeah, like as a 10-year-old, like if I was watching this in my room and my parents came in, absolutely not.
I think I would have got away with some of the next episodes because it's like them in fancy night clothing talking and stuff for a while. That would have been fine, but
The parents get thrown by that and you'd get away with it.
Snake Lord apparently is that guy's name.
Snake whom?
Snake Lord.
Oh, well, that was close. Yeah, I think, I don't know, like that transfer, that, because I remember, I'll be honest, I had this on a Hong Kong bootleg originally, and the quality was not great. Not great at all, but this looks great on Blu-ray.
Yes, it does. As much as I'm curious, I'm like, do I need to see that story again?
Well, that's the thing. I feel like I've seen it and I've read it. It's,
I feel like I need to probably just be cracking on with reading the bits of the story I've not seen yet.
Well, that's what I do that every few weeks. I'll read a bit and I'll think, oh, this is great. And then I'll remember, oh, there's a new One Punch Man. And I'll think, oh no, there's Chainsaw Man as well. And I'll read them and then I'll lose the rhythm of Berserk.
I think the video game ends with them heading towards the Elf Island or whatever it is.
Right.
After all that terrible shit's gone down at the port. But,
good stuff. Yeah. Berserk.
But I don't even know how much more there is. He's done after that
point. Oh, I couldn't tell you.
It's the old Hunter situation.
I know.
Well, there's plenty of other things. Plenty of other anime in the sea.
There's those two and George R.R. Martin. doing everything but what they should.
Well, they should not build a rod for their own backs. Just do what you like.
True.
But, maybe your fella on Hunter needs a rod for his back because his back's the problem. That's what I was thinking, because I was like, I feel like I would feel guilty as an 8-year-old watching any of these shows. Yeah. Which one of the ones am I going to be at least, which one of the ones I can manage to watch am I going to be the least amount of trouble in if my mum finds me watching them?
It's got to be Saint Seiya.
It has to be Saint Seiya.
On that logic anyway, because there's no nudity.
No, I was thinking that like 11-year-olds, I'm not sure even the nudity would have appealed to me that much. At 12, then yes, it would be Ranma. But
I wouldn't want to get caught seeing that. I'd rather be, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Get somebody cut in half, fine.
Yeah, but boobs on the screen, absolutely.
I'm even embarrassed by that now if like, I'm watching something like that. I don't want people seeing it.
Yeah, what's he watching?
Cut someone in half, that's fine. Exactly. Oh, what a creep.
Yeah, it would probably be Saint Seiya, I think.
Yeah.
I think I would, yeah. I think he, not even fear of parents finding it. I think, like, Berserk would have been far too much for, puny little Brian.
It's true. Puny all of us. Like,
I think we've all struggled with that. I wouldn't have been ready for
Bunch of soft lads.
I was trying to remember, I was racking my brains and I actually can't remember what the air date was for Akira on UK terrestrial TV. But I remember watching that and being freaked out at the time, and I'm pretty sure at that point I was like 12, 14? I can't remember.
Good news is, Gary, I can tell you.
Hey, there we go.
Spang it into the old... Let me stick... So it was on... It would have been on BBC Two. It was a part of that manga night with Jonathan Ross hosting it. Oldest first. Okay. Those are just things with Akira Kurosawa involved.
Yeah, that's the problem. You Google Akira and it's like...
Akira. This cult science fiction animation, a genre known as manga, launches a new season of world cinema. 8th of January 1994 was when it first aired.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I was like 13 when I watched that. And I remember at the time being like... At the time, thinking that was fairly full on as a 13-year-old. So yeah, as an 8-year-old, Berserk would never have landed. It would have been like, and I'm pretty sure even Ranma would probably have weirded me out as an 8-year-old.
Oh, it wasn't a night. It was that manga documentary was the night before, and then Akira was the following day. It was a double bill of Mad Max and then Akira.
Nice.
Now, weirdly, I recorded Mad Max. I was not interested in Akira.
Screw that cartoon rubbish.
Yep. Actually, 94, I probably would have seen it. My brother had already got it on VHS, I think was the issue there.
Mm.
Whereas I think maybe I hadn't actually seen Mad Max at this point. So. Cause I would have been reading Akira out of my brother's manga manias.
Gosh.
And now he's just given me the last two volumes. He was clearing out space for more baby things, so.
Oh, nice.
Give me all his Akiras. So I was like, okay, I'll just need those last two. I'll get rid of the other four somewhere. So I have to start reading that again.
Not all brothers wear capes.
Got a new Akira anime coming.
Have we?
Yes.
Yes. And apparently a bonus disc on the 4K release. In fact, I was actually only talking about that recently because I was explaining to people that Akira will be the first film that I purchased on VHS, then rebought on DVD, then rebought on Blu-ray, and then will rebuy on 4K Blu-ray.
Yeah, I haven't got a 4K TV, so thankfully I can avoid doing that.
Yeah, there's a few films that I've owned on the three formats, but most of them I'm content with the Blu-rays. I think Akira is one of the ones where I will rebuy it on 4K.
Yeah,
Akira... I'd love to see that 4K.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it at the cinema at Leeds Film Fest, which is... as close as I'll get for a while to seeing it in 4K.
Yeah, I didn't buy Akira, but I did end up with my brother's VHS copy. And Spinal Tap's the thing I've bought the most, I think.
You rebought Spinal Tap on 4K Blu-ray?
No, I haven't, but I wouldn't have. I doubt.
If it gets a release on 4K.
If next time I upgrade my TV, it would probably end up being a 4K by default, probably at that point.
Yeah,
I just did upgrade my TV. And,
I was doing some Googling whilst we were discussing, and I worked out the origins of that Beta Ray Bill comment. It was Kevin Feige?
Uh-huh.
So apparently Beta Ray Bill was originally going to be in Thor Ragnarok, but Kevin Feige said that he was deliberately cut from the film because he didn't have significant screen time, and he has stated that Bill would appear in a later film that could do him better justice.
Okay.
Obviously, whether it will happen or not, who knows?
No, exactly. It may end up in a TV show at this point, because it feels like very much like they're focusing more on getting you to subscribe to Disney Plus than they are to get you to show up to the cinema. Because it sounds very clearly like the plan is for Young Avengers, but I don't know whether that's going to be a TV, Disney Plus thing, or whether it's going to be a film, but to have all the setup, you've got to have watched everything on Disney Plus.
A Disney Plus thing, or is that still part of the?
You mean that film they made ages ago and they've still not released?
No, there's New Mutants TV show, isn't there?
No, New Warriors TV show is what they were trying to find somebody to buy, and nobody wanted it. That's part of the reason why they've ousted all the TV people, because they were basically making loads of stuff that nobody wanted. I mean, I wanted to watch it, but no TV company wanted to show it.
Risk it.
Yeah.
Risk.
I can't remember the actress's name, who was going to be playing Squirrel Girl, but I liked her.
Milana Van Troob?
That's her. I liked her in Other Space. And I like Squirrel Girl. And I was like...
Good mix.
Good mix, yeah. And yeah, well, I guess that's never happening. But no, there's that New Mutants film, which Fox made, which is apparently so bad that it's been sitting on a shelf gathering dust.
Nightmare.
Oh, is that the one that's... I was just looking on IMDb. There's the New Mutants 2020 coming out April 8th.
Yeah. That's the one with...
Oh, is that the one that's meant to be bad?
Maisie Williams, yeah.
I do admit, when I did see the trailer, I thought it was a TV show.
I thought it was a TV show. I didn't realize it was a film. I legitimately thought it was a TV show.
Anyway, these are all things we should be talking about after we wrap the podcast up. Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Pleasure to be here.
It's now the end of the podcast. We'll be back next time with another one of these. Gotta find out what Lewis wants to watch, and then I've got to send it.
One of them is something I can't remember what I already chose. What was it?
Flame of Wrecker.
Yeah, that's gonna be one of them.
And
It is Lewis Smith, yes. No one's picked Dragon Ball Z yet.
No.
And it's eligible. Actually, I don't know if it's eligible for Lewis.
No, I don't know.
He's younger than me.
Rightio, we'll be back next time with another one of these. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now we can carry on talking about Disney things.
Well, I'm going to have to head off because I need to go to bed shortly because I'm up mega early.
It's like 9:30.